change the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
Hello, my friends. This is Mickey Desai. This is the Nonprofit Snapcast. Thank you for joining us on the line via Skype. I have our friend Andy Robinson. Andy, glad you could join us again. I'm hoping we can have an excellent conversation talking about running meetings, how to run meetings effectively.
Yep, we can do that. I'm happy to have that conversation because you and I have both been to a lot of really miserable meetings, right?
It is the truth. Actually, some of them can just are completely soporific, and the ones that are not soporific are often just very frustrating. But every once in a while, I see one that's really, really well done, and I hope that my own meetings, I think, are rather well done. So this is going to be an education for me. hopefully I'll learn a thing or two and make my meetings better. But on the other hand, before we get into the content of it, doesn't the topic seem sort of obvious? I mean, what, and maybe this is what gets us into the actual content. What is it that separates a good meeting from a bad one?
Well, let's start with a bad one, and you can help me with this. If we were gonna benchmark bad, like think about all the bad meetings you've participated in.
Yes.
Let's run the list. How do we know a bad meeting is bad? Right. So I mean, we'll go back and forth. You pick one. What's one benchmark of a bad meeting?
A bad meeting doesn't start on time.
Okay. A bad meeting is poorly organized with a really loose agenda.
Ah, yeah, absolutely. I think a bad meeting leaves people frustrated.
Yeah, I think a bad meeting doesn't have any clear outcomes at the end in terms of what the next steps are and who's going to do what.
Exactly. A bad meeting doesn't set people up to get things done.
Yeah, that's good. And, you know, we could go on and on, but I'll give you one more. A bad meeting is dominated by one voice, and it's not a collective effort. It's somebody who's sort of doing everything instead of letting the group do its work.
Right, exactly.
So I'm sure the folks who are listening could add to the list. There's a lot of benchmarks of bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then the question, and again, I would get your input on this. Why do you think, if we know what bad is and we've all experienced bad, why are there so many bad meetings?
I don't know. I wish I had a good answer to that question. Because, on the one hand, everyone's different.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Is it a question of leadership style? Is it just people not being aware of what's in front of them and the people around them?
All right. So I'm gonna go through some basics of how to design and run an effective meeting. And I'll say this holds true for meetings in person, which is still the predominant way that we meet. But if you're meeting by Skype or Zoom or remotely, or you have some people in a room and other people who are coming in remotely, I think what we're talking about here still holds. So, you know, that's just to set the context, which is in some ways a meeting is a meeting is a meeting, whether right. You're doing it in person or you're doing it remotely. And the verities are still the truths that you have to pay attention to. So here's the first thing for me. You have to have a clear why. Like, why are we having this meeting? And far too many are pro forma, like, you know, we have the weekly staff meeting.
Right.
And I'm a little biased in this conversation because I've been self-employed for 25 years and I'm completely ruined as an employee, right? I'd be a lousy employee at this point. So, you know, if I want to have a staff meeting, it's me talking to myself, which
right.
happens often. However, I do a lot of client meetings and I do a lot of strategic planning meetings and fundraising planning meetings. And I'm always starting with, like, why are we having this meeting?
Right.
What do we hope to accomplish? So the purpose is the why, the goal is the what do we hope to accomplish? And then the objective is how, like how are we going to measure that this was useful? So what I want to propose, and we're on an audio feed here, so I can't do the visual, but I will describe this and it's not complicated. I'm going to propose an agenda format that has 7 columns on it.
Okay.
And I'll just go through these real quick because they're pretty straightforward and people will understand this. The first column is the time. Like, when are we going to start? And for the record, I'm not a guy who usually puts times on agendas. I run a lot of trainings and meetings and stuff, and I generally don't time stuff. But if you find that your meetings are out of control, trying to design them in a way where you say this is a 10-minute block and this is a 15 or 20-minute block, that's actually helpful. That helps to get some control over things. So that's column one is the time. Column two is the topic. Like, what are we going to talk about? So that's straightforward, and pretty much everybody has that in agenda. Mm-hmm. The third column says who, and who means who is going to lead this section. And I'm a great believer in shared leadership. So I have a sample meeting agenda that's in front of me on my computer that includes six different people who are leading different portions of the meeting. A, this spreads power around, because whoever is facilitating that section of the meeting or whoever is presenting actually has a little more power. And so if you have the boss person who sort of runs everything very strictly, it's good to spread that power around. But the other thing that this does is it helps with turnout. So, for example, I work with a lot of nonprofit board of directors. And if board members know in advance that they're going to be facilitating a portion of the meeting, they're going to show up. And so if you have a meeting where there's six different people who are leading different portions of the meeting, then you know you're going to have at least six people in the room participate, right?
Right.
So, you know, to me, this is leadership development. Learning how to run a meeting is a really good skill to learn. So I like to spread that around. So that's the third column. That's the who's going to lead each section. The fourth column is the one that's closest to my heart, and it says decision to be made.
Yes, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
And so not every agenda item comes with a decision, but at least some of them should. And I'm a bit of a hard case here, because if I'm designing an agenda and I have this column that says decision to be made and there's nothing in that column, I'm thinking real hard about canceling the meeting. Because I think the purpose of a meeting is to make decisions.
Yes.
Now, I will be a little gentler here. Sometimes we meet to brainstorm or to have generative conversations and to throw ideas against the wall. And that may or may not be a decision-making situation, and I get that. But most meetings, the reason you're getting in a room together is to make a decision.
Right.
Right. So as you're designing the agenda, you think real hard about that question. And I'll say it again. If there's nothing in the decision to be made column, I would encourage you to think about canceling the meeting. And going and doing something else. Now, fifth column, and this is where we get into the action steps. The fifth column is follow-up needed. Mm-hmm. And not every action item will have follow-up, but some of them will. The sixth column is who is responsible for the follow-up. And the seventh and last column is says deadline, by when. So what do we need to do follow-up? Who is going to do the follow-up? And when is that going to be completed by? And so what happens when you start to use this model is people walk out of there with assignments and deadlines. And this becomes sort of the skeleton of the next meeting agenda, because then part of the work is what follow-up happened, what are the subsequent decisions that need to be made, who is going to be involved in the subsequent follow-up, and by when.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit ornate to create an agenda with seven columns on it, but it's actually pretty helpful because it clarifies why you're there. It clarifies who's going to do what. And it also builds in the what do we do now after the meeting part of the meeting. So that is the tool that I use most often with clients and with groups that have out of control meetings. Now, a little tip here is if you have the big talker who will talk on any topic at great length.
Yes.
One of the tricks is you make that person the timekeeper.
I love it.
It's good. And then you say, Joe or Martha or Juan or whoever it is, you know, your job, here's the agenda. Your job is to keep us on time. And what tends to happen is that person is looking at their watch or looking at their phone and keeping time, and they're spending less time talking and dominating.
Right.
So I wish that that was foolproof, but it's pretty good.
I like it.
Right? So, I mean, to me, part one is you have to clarify why you're having the meeting, what the goal is, what you want to get out of it. Mm-hmm. And then you need to build an agenda that demonstrates those decisions and then shows some accountability for follow-up. And then, you know, reiterate, the third piece I like is a shared leadership model where different people are facilitating different parts of the agenda. What's your response to that? Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. I think it does. You know, the model of the actual seven-column agenda you've described really does set the stage for making actual decisions and doing follow-up. You know, I'm thinking of the work that I get to do with Georgia River Network, and the agenda we use is not quite that robust.
Yep.
You know, the thing that our agenda is missing is the follow-up piece. But I think that, you know, I think it's sort of understood, and we're lucky enough to have a really great board that has that mutual understanding of, okay, this agenda is really setting the stage for the next meeting's agenda. So, you know, things need to get done. We don't want to just be sitting here spinning our wheels. So,
right. And, you know, to go a little further on this, if you're designing agendas and there's not a lot of decisions, and let's say you typically meet monthly, but you're doing these agendas and some of them are lacking decisions, it's maybe you think about having a less frequent meeting schedule. I mean, maybe exactly. You could meet 10 times a year, 8 times a year, and you could still get the work done. Mm-hmm. And that leaves more time for committees or work groups or other volunteer activities that people can do to support the organization.
Yes.
So let's talk a little bit about sort of the culture of meetings and how we can create space for everybody to talk and how we can deal with disruptions and things like that. You know, a good meeting in my universe is everybody participates in some way. And we need to accept that on the introvert-extrovert scale, people are all over the place, right? Not everybody is comfortable voicing their opinion in a large group. Right. Other people step into that space and they're comfortable doing it. So a few tips here. First of all, you might consider ground rules and just try and get those on a flip chart or get them on the whiteboard. And I'd crowdsource them from the group. I say, if we're going to have a good meeting, what do you think the ground rules for a good meeting are?
Right.
And one of them would be don't interrupt. Another one might be the classic step up, step back, which means if you're somebody who tends to be a little quiet or introverted, try and push yourself out there a little more. If you're somebody who tends to take up a lot of space, try and dial it back a little and be self-aware about that.
Right.
A classic facilitator trick, especially if you're having challenging or perhaps interesting conversations, is to break people into small groups. So if you've got a board meeting and there's a dozen board members and there's something you all want to discuss, you might say, okay, let's get into groups of three and take 5 minutes and just talk this through with each other. And then from each of those small groups, bring us back your best idea. And the nice thing about the small group model is that it's much harder for the dominators to dominate in that system. Mm-hmm. And it's easier for the people who are more reticent to step up and speak. You can also get a lot more stuff on the table quickly if you're using small groups. So even if you're having a, you know, traditional formal board meeting, mm-hmm. it's worth considering, are there topics that we're discussing that would be best handled in small groups?
You're not just talking about committees.
No, I'm talking about, like, we're having a board meeting and let's say somebody says, you know, we've been having this discussion about our annual fundraising event and we're all in agreement that it's not working. What do we replace it with? I mean, what's an alternative funding model that might work for us?
Right.
And then you say, okay, I want you guys to, you know, we got 12 people. Let's do three groups of four, give you 10 minutes, sit around and discuss this. And then come back to the big group with your best idea for an alternative that might work for us. So it's not a formal committee thing. It's just how you can get participation in the meeting. And, you know, people don't come to meetings to hear reports or to listen to stuff. Mostly they come to solve problems.
Right.
So, you know, a small group breakout is one of the classic problem solving strategies. If you have the big talkers, another way to handle that, if you're running the meeting, say, okay, for the next 3 minutes, I just want to hear from anyone who hasn't spoken yet. And you're welcome to pass. That's totally fine. But we're just going to go around the circle. And anyone who hasn't weighed in on this topic yet, that's who I want to hear from. Let's see, about disruptors.
Yes.
One of my thoughts is you want to listen and be respectful as possible, because sometimes people who tend to disrupt, what they really want is attention.
Right.
And so try giving them some attention and see if that dials them back a little bit. If somebody is you know, I'm cautious about calling people out in front of a group because I don't want to shame them or embarrass them.
Exactly.
But I might literally pull somebody aside and say, hey, Fred, can you come and talk with me for a second? I have a question I want to ask you. And you just sort of step aside from me and say, y'all talk for a few minutes. We'll be back. And you pull Fred aside and say, I really need your help. You're off topic. I know you want to talk about this a lot. It's not on the agenda. And I want to make sure we can cover it. I think what I want to do is hold this to the end of the agenda. If we have time, we'll take it up then. If not, I'll make sure it's on the agenda for the next meeting. Is that acceptable to you? And see if you can have a little sidebar where you can negotiate how to solve that problem so that Fred can be present in the meeting and not obsessing about whatever Fred is obsessing about.
Mm-hmm.
It's not perfect, but it's better than initiating an argument in front of the full room.
Exactly. Right?
You know, and sometimes we just have to have conflict, and that's how it is. And I think comfort with conflict is actually a good facilitation skill, but you have to manage that conflict, and you have to time it in a way that doesn't eat up the entire meeting dealing with whatever that issue is.
Sure.
Let me see if there's any other thoughts I have for you on this subject. I mean, you know, while I'm looking, what are you hearing today? What are you learning it from this?
I'm learning of different ways to keep an agenda moving. If you know, we should get stalled on a decision-making process, or if one person is waxing a little too poetic on a certain element of the agenda. I've had some good success trying to reel things in by saying, okay, I'll just say out loud during the meeting, let's just stick to the topic, and I promise we'll come back to that later. And then usually that's enough to keep things moving and focused on whatever decision at hand needs to be made.
Yeah, an old facilitator trick is called the parking lot. And some people use bike rack because they don't want to have fossil fuel in there.
right.
But the bike rack or the parking lot is basically stuff that comes up that's off agenda. You have a piece of paper on the wall, you know, a flip chart stand, and you say you're going to write it on the parking lot. And hey, this is not on the agenda, but I want to make sure we capture it because it's important to some people in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll either take care of it at the end if we have time, or it will roll over to a subsequent meeting.
So I have to ask, you know, when looking at agendas and board meetings in particular,
yep,
isn't Robert's Rules of Order supposed to solve a lot of these problems for boards, or do you find that Robert's presents headaches for people?
Yeah, this is a really good question. I am not a fan of Robert's Rules. And I will tell you, the other word for Robert's Rules is parliamentary procedure, right?
Right, exactly.
Right? You're not a parliament. You're a board. You know, I mean, we're not a legislative body. We're a nonprofit organization. And my experience with, you know, Robert's Rules parliamentary procedure is A, we use it badly. B, people who think they know it or perhaps do know it better than others can use it to bully people.
Right.
Right. So ultimately, if your bylaws require you to move and second and take a vote on stuff, that's fine. But the rest of the meeting can be an informal conversation. And if I have to choose between consensus or Robert's Rules, I'm choosing consensus most of the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
And building consensus in a group, and perhaps you and I will have a subsequent conversation about this, is that's a whole nother topic unto itself. I there's no law that says a nonprofit has to run its meetings through Robert's Rules. And if you choose to do it, that's fine. I mean, one argument I have heard, which is interesting, a colleague of mine who works primarily with advocacy organizations says, I like using Robert's Rules because when we go to city council or when we go to county commission or when we go to the legislature and we're trying to make laws or policies, they're using Robert's Rules. So I want my people to be comfortable with it so they can see how do we. So that's an interesting argument, but at the end of the day, I would still rather have a more informal consensus model. Sometimes we use something called modified consensus, where you start the conversation and you get as close to a consensus as you can. And if there isn't one, you take a vote.
Exactly. Exactly.
And then it's a majority rule situation. It's not true consensus, but it at least is a flavor of that.
Exactly. And you're talking about making presentations to legislative boards or things like that. And I've been in a situation where they would actually role play those circumstances in advance so that it didn't you know, yeah. and do it offline so that it doesn't take time during a meeting, and whoever's going to, you know, put on a suit and show up that day is going to meet later on, and they will go through and rehearse whatever's going to happen in front of that city council or whatever. I really appreciate this. This is, I think, very useful stuff. And what can we give to our listeners as maybe a final thought, and when they're putting their agendas together and thinking about the work that they want to do with their nonprofits?
Well, first of all, you know, there's the old line from Descartes, which is, I think, therefore I am. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of nonprofits are, we meet, therefore we are. I mean, as if the meeting was the justification of the work.
Right.
Right. And, you know, a meeting is a meeting. And I think one of the challenges we have in recruiting board members and other volunteers is that getting people's time is hard. And if you're not using that time really well, it's harder to recruit people.
Yes.
So, you know, either we have productive meetings or we figure out some other way to gather and make decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And so just sort of going through the motions of having a meeting is not the work. You know, the work is what your organization does, and the meeting should support that and not the other way around.
Excellent. Thank you, Andy. As always, it's very good talking to you. And I hope we can do this again in the future. I mean, as long as you're around and have the time, I love these conversations and hope we can do more of them.
I look forward to talking with you more. I know it's July in Atlanta, so I hope you stay cool.
And for our listeners, we both hope that you're staying cool and having effective meetings. You can find us on Facebook. Just search for the Nonprofit Snapcast on Facebook. And on our website, which is nonprofitsnapcast.org, you can actually listen to full episodes right there on the website without having to subscribe to a podcast mechanism, if that's the way you prefer getting our content. And we love it when you tell your friends about us. So thanks for joining us, and we will talk to you again in the future.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
This has been the Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.